versus Stinks versus Schipperboard and the approach? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May I please record, my name is Matt Kosmicki. I am representing Mr. Schipperboard. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Schipperboard was charged in Lancaster County District Court with 4 counts. 3 of them possession of controlled substance, the 4th count being possession of a deadly weapon by a prohibited person. He waived arraignment. There was a motion to suppress, which was overruled by the district court. There was a stipulated trial that perfected his appeal to this court. And we're here today to ask you to overturn or reverse the district court on the denial of his motion to suppress. The facts, and you know them briefly, I think, I'll go through them, is on June 6, 2016, police were called to the area 31st and Sequoia Drive. This is kind of a park area, Tierra Park. There were 2 people fighting. Officer Seaman from Lincoln Police Department was the first to show up on the scene. He sees Mr. Schipperboard. That's the only person that he sees on the scene. Mr. Schipperboard was, according to Officer Seaman, his shirt was torn. There was some blood on his arm and his face. He asks if he's okay. He's been in a fight. Schipperboard denies being involved in any fight. Soon thereafter, 4 other officers show up. Schipperboard wants to leave. They place him in handcuffs in less than 5 minutes after they were on the scene and set him on the curb and told him he cannot leave. They conduct their investigation, try to locate a second party to see if there was a fight. It takes about an hour for them to do this whole call. But they determine quickly, I think, there was. They can't find another person, so they're not sure they can investigate an assault. But they decide that because of Mr. Schipperboard's behavior, that he's under the influence of something, they weren't sure, that he cannot go on his own, which he had requested to do repeatedly.
So is this the point at which you believe the continued detention becomes unlawful?
No. I'm going to do that. I think there's the Hitchcock factors, right? And there's the first one is the... the voluntary, contact, which no Fourth Amendment involved in. The second is the Terry type stuff. I think that immediately when there's a show of police force, there's 4 of them, when Schipperboard says, nothing's going on here, I want to leave, and they handcuff him, and then set him on the curb and tell him that he's not free to leave, he's under arrest at that point. Not an hour later when they determine he could go somewhere.
Well, so let's say he is seized at that point.
Right.
But there's an investigation going on at this point. Trying to determine
right.
whether there has been an assault because of the report, because they find some things in the middle of the street. So there's still an investigation going on. But at some point, they conclude that.
They conclude that sometime. It doesn't take them an hour later when they eventually, say you're not going anywhere and they're going to take you to the car. I mean, that's beforehand. There's some time there while he's sitting on the curb asking to go, and they're saying, no, we're going to take you somewhere, and they're, trying to decide if he's going to detox parents, call his parents. Talk to his parents if that's okay for him to come home. There's a conversation in the record of deaths that they called and then,
The dad agreed to take him, correct?
The dad agreed to take him, yeah. Schipperboard, didn't really want to go there, but, with ultimatum detox for his parents, he decided to go there.
So I guess my question is, once the investigation into the assault is concluded, then the officers begin to determine what to do with Mr. Schipperboard.
Right.
What's the rationale for the continued detention then?
For them, what they say is because he's under the influence of something. They didn't feel like he was either, I think they said he was either a risk to himself or others, even though he didn't make any threats to anyone else. And that was their reason for their continued detention.
And he had a car there.
He had a car there.
So they were concerned that he was going to get in the car and start driving, and they weren't sure that he was competent to do that.
But they made no investigation of that. They think he was, but there's no, field sobriety test, PBT, pulling or breath test, anything else. Just his behavior is what they're basing that on. And
was there testimony that one of the officers was a drug recognition expert?
I believe there was. I want to say it's Officer Seaman. It's been a while.
Okay.
I can't remember.
Was his opinion that this was narcotics related?
I think what he said was that some kind of mood. But I remember the record. I'll refer to the record, but it was some kind of mind-altering substance. I don't think he didn't say it was a narcotic. That was exact word. I think it was some kind of mind-altering substance.
Okay. So PBT may not help.
It would rule out alcohol.
Sure.
Yeah. And some other things. I think examination of the eyes would rule out they would show you some things, you know, what DREs are about, some of those things. But they didn't do anything. It was just this hunch. And basically what their hunch is because he's agitated, he wants to leave. He doesn't like police. You know, he's just not against the law, not like the police. He wants to be left alone, and he wants to go home, and he...
So based upon their observation of Mr. Schiffermiller, had he gotten in his car and started to drive away, would they have been justified in stopping him then?
No, I don't think there's anything to justify that. There's no like he's falling over. I don't see that he demonstrated anything to show that he can't operate a motor vehicle safely. And if you're referring to this like community caretaker thing that the state referred to in there, that was very narrowly adopted in this state, and this applies to automobiles. And this is, I know there's a car there, but, I mean, Superman could have walked home. You know what I mean? He could have called for a friend to come get him, any of those other things. His car was there, sure. I don't know if there's any indication he's going to get in the car and leave. They didn't ask him, how are you going to leave, since they didn't get my car and go. He just asked to leave.
So is it your position that it was unreasonable for the police to be concerned?
Yes.
That does not mean a standard of reasonableness for them to be concerned. But given their observations of one of them is a more trained officer in this area, that if they think he was under the influence of something, that they didn't have a right to be concerned about him operating a vehicle or even just leaving the scene.
I don't think they were justified in being concerned. I don't think it was reasonable for them to detain him in that way, and that's my position. I mean, I don't know I think that leads to a lot of potential for abuse. If you said someone's agitated and they're saying, I want to go, you know, I want to leave, I mean, officers always say, well, that means they're under the influence of these things. It wasn't like he was talking about, you know, weird abstract things, talking about Martians and all that other stuff. He was tracking with their conversations, answering their questions. What evidence that the officers said that they saw supports this behavior that justifies, that's reasonable to detain someone? You know, his shirt is torn, yes. He said his knuckles, and he says he's running around shadow boxing trees. That's what he said he was doing. I don't know that anything he said or anything he acted different to them justifies the Fourth Amendment intrusion to arrest him. And then look at the length of it. I mean, it lasted an hour. I think they determined very quickly there was no one else. I mean, they just show up in this area, they do a scan, you know, whatever they call it, a look around for people, and they didn't find anyone. So there's no assault. They determined that, and he says, I want to leave.
Was the hour inclusive of trying to figure out what they were going to do with Mr. Schiffermiller?
Yes. Yes, it was. Yeah,
do we
was.
Know how long it was from the time they arrived until they concluded they didn't have anything to charge on an assault?
No, I don't think that's very definitive in the record of how long that took, no.
And there was no other, at least as far as the district court's findings, the only finding it made for the continued detention after the assault investigation was completed was this community caretaking exception.
Yes, and the concern about his behavior, where does he need to go? Yes. Mm-hmm. I see him in my rebuttal time, so thanks.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Nathan Liss, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska. The state maintains that the detention of Schiffermiller, the pat-down of Schiffermiller, and the subsequent search of the flashlight were all lawful. As far as the detention, as set forth in our brief, we submit that the initial portion of the detention while officers were investigating the reported assault was a permissible Terry stop, and after that investigation concluded, the remainder of the detention, while they tried to figure out what to do with Mr. Schiffermiller, justified under the community caretaking exception.
Notwithstanding Rivera, the Rivera case?
Correct. I mean, Rivera didn't say that community caretaking is inapplicable, it just found it didn't rise to that level.
Said it's very rarely.
Correct. As are warrantless search exceptions. I mean, all of those things are to be applied narrowly.
And the court in Rivera found an alternate justification, or found there was no seizure.
Right.
Is there any, if we throw out community caretaking exception, is there any other justification for the continued detention once the assault investigation was completed?
Well, I mean, once they wrap up their assault investigation, I think the only thing remaining at that point is their concern about what to do with him.
What's the emergency?
The emergency? I don't know that I would characterize
it. Don't the cases often
say under community caretaking that there has to be some emergency or very exigent circumstance for the continued detention? And isn't it typically applied when there's a somebody in the driver's seat or passenger seat of a vehicle?
Well, the cases, at least in Nebraska, dealing with community caretaking exception apply in the automobile context, but the exception itself is not limited to that context. The automobile exception involves the criminal component, criminal investigations under the Fourth Amendment, and allows warrantless intrusions in that regard for criminal purposes. But the community caretaking, as the U.S. Supreme Court explained in Caddy, is totally divorced from the criminal context. Its focus is on safety and protection of either the officers, individual, or just the public at large. So it's not intertwined with the automobile exception, as the appellant's arguing, and it's not limited to that extent. It's separate and distinct.
But there were alternatives here to what the police did, weren't there?
Well, they looked at their alternatives. They looked at taking him to detox. They thought that probably would not really be a viable option, given that detox was just going to force him to take him to the hospital to get a fitness for confinement for him. They looked at taking him to the hospital, but given that he didn't appear to need medical treatment and declined medical treatment, they didn't see any need to do so. So they did what they thought was the least intrusive means, was finding a safe place for him to go.
What would have been the harm in allowing him to walk?
Well, they weren't sure that he was in any condition to walk home. They weren't sure if he was going to get into another disturbance on his way home, especially given that he'd just been in a fight. He appeared to be under the influence of alcohol.
Was there any effort to have him find someone come pick him up?
I don't recall if I recall the record correctly, they asked for information regarding a roommate, and he declined to provide that information. So they were making efforts in that regard, as I recall the record, and he wasn't cooperating in that respect. So they finally resorted to calling his father and asking if that would be
But they didn't ask the father to come get him.
No, I don't believe there was any evidence that the father volunteered to do so. They asked if it would be acceptable to transport him to the father's house, and the father said that's acceptable, and Mr. Schiffermiller did as well. So I think in light of all the circumstances here, they had a reasonable concern for his condition. I think they would have been derelict to simply leave the scene there and leave him to his own devices, especially in light of the fact that he had a car there. I mean, I think they would have been crazy to just simply leave him there and say, well, hopefully this turns out okay. I think they were reasonable in what they did, and I think their actions were justified under the community caretaking exception. I think the community caretaking exception, as I have read our case law, I mean, it authorizes detentions and seizures provided that the actions are reasonable, and I would submit that they were in this case, given the circumstances. And as we pointed out in our brief, there are a number of other courts, both federal and state, that have applied the community caretaking exception outside the automobile context, warranting seizures and impairment-type cases and warranting pat-downs prior to transporting a suspect in a cruiser. So I think the same rationale would support the actions taken in this case. I think they were justified. I think the law supported what they did, and we would submit that they were reasonable and justified in all respects.
Could you address the search of the flashlight?
As far as the search of the flashlight is set forth in our brief, we would submit that it was justified under the search incident to arrest exception once the brass knuckles were detected during the pat-down. It's immaterial whether Mr. Schiffermiller had officially been placed under arrest at that point in time. Once probable cause existed for an arrest, which it did once they felt the brass knuckles in his pocket, the search incident to arrest exception came into play. So the search would be justified on that basis. I guess the last and final point we would make, I would reiterate that we do believe the community caretaking exception applies here, but in the event that this court would disagree, in passing, I would note that we see no basis to apply the exclusionary rule here. Given all of the evidence here and all of these circumstances, I don't see anything improper that the officers did here. The exclusionary rule is aimed at deterring improper, flagrantly improper conduct by officers, and I just don't see what this is deterring. Are we going to deter officers from taking care of the community and protecting people and ensuring that they have a safe place to go as opposed to just leaving the scene and letting this guy drive away? I don't see what we would be deterring. And so,
in this investigation, is Mr. Schiffermiller being investigated as a as having committed a potential crime, as having been a victim of a crime, or both?
I think at least the initial part of the investigation would be that he was involved in the
Well, there was the initial call was that there was a fight, and a fellow with camouflage pants and a tank
right.
top was one of them, and so they at least had that much information. But beyond that, what's the nature of the investigation?
Well, I don't know that it has to go beyond. I think the investigation into the reported assault was the investigation for the first 30 to 40 minutes there when they were trying to figure out
okay.
if an assault did in fact occur and if he was in fact involved. And I think, as you pointed out, the evidence gave them reason to believe that he was involved, given the report that two people were in a fight, and when they show up, one of the individuals is reported wearing camouflage pants or fatigues, and he has those on. He's got blood all over him. He's got blood on his knuckles, and it appears that he's punched something. His explanation for what he'd been doing, I mean, jogging and shadow boxing in the trees, didn't add up to the officers, given all of his injuries. So I think the investigation at that point was reasonable, and it was supported by the evidence.
He wasn't answering questions either as to anything he did or as to what had been done to him.
Right.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I want to clarify. So if the community care exception is not applicable here, is there a plan B in terms of any other exceptions? Or are you just saying it's community care?
I guess from our standpoint, plan A is community caretaking, which I submit is part of the actions in this case, and plan B is that the exclusionary rule shouldn't apply. To the extent that community caretaking didn't justify this, and I don't know why it wouldn't, but if it doesn't, I think that's a reasonable mistake of law on the officer's part. I think that they, in their minds, were doing the right thing, and I think they were. They're sworn to protect and serve. That's precisely what they were doing. And if the law is going to say, you can't do that under these circumstances, I certainly think they were within their rights to think that they could.
So when you say exclusionary rule, are you talking good faith, or what are you talking?
Well, yeah, I mean, good faith is an exception to the exclusionary rule, and I think that they would have a good faith basis to believe that the conduct that they took, the actions in their case, were in fact lawful. And when you look at their testimony and their justification for what they were doing beyond the criminal investigation, it was for his concern as well as the public. They didn't want to let him go. And so that, to me, is the essence of the community caretaking function. That's what they thought they were doing.
I understand, and I certainly appreciate the argument that the officers were acting out of concern for this individual. But in light of what our Supreme Court has told us about that exception, it just causes me to pause in extending it seemingly a little further.
Well, we acknowledge that it's rarely used. It is a limited principle, but our warrantless search exceptions are as well. I mean, those are carefully crafted and delineated, and I mean, those are narrowly applied as well. Typically, we see them more in the criminal context because
we have more than three. We have more than three appellate cases and the other exclusions, though, or exceptions, I should say.
Well, we do, of course, right. But typically, because we have a criminal investigation in place, and the criminal warrantless exceptions are going to take us where we need to go, so we don't resort to the community caretaking exception.
Right.
But here, once a criminal investigation ends, if there's nothing further to justify detentions and searches in a criminal matter, there has to be something else. So I think this case, I think the facts and the law would support the application of the community caretaking exception. I understand it's to be narrowly applied, but I think its narrow application would apply here.
Thank you.
If
there are no further questions, we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time for rebuttal?
As far as the exclusionary rule in its purpose is to deter police behavior, there is a problem here. It's being unlawfully restrained in violation of the Fourth Amendment is what the deterrent effect is, and that's the whole purpose of the exclusionary rule. So the state's argument that the exclusionary rule doesn't apply here, if you find that there's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, then that's exactly what it's designed to do. So I think the exclusionary rule is applicable. The other thing, there's two more things that I think that the state's touching on, that, you know, officer safety, and I want to cover that whether they were or they weren't, but there is nothing in the facts that shows that Mr. Schiffermiller was armed and dangerous. The officers don't act like it. There's nothing from Mr. Schiffermiller appeared or
well, they
said.
They were concerned enough to cuff him.
But not because
of... But you don't think that's justified either, I guess.
No. Okay. And I don't think it's because he's armed and dangerous. And that's the other thing. Look at how this went. I mean, if this is a true Terry stop, you say, okay, come here. You want to put some kind of restraint on him, pat him down for weapons and contraband, not wait an hour later. I mean, that to me is just evidence that they didn't think he was armed.
Or wasn't that just because they were going to put him in the back seat of the car and transport him?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Wasn't the concern that they were going to put him in the car and transport him? And
correct.
Is that unreasonable then to pat him down for weapons?
Well, I mean, I think they're going to say it's for officer safety, but again, I think it's unreasonable just because he doesn't exhibit anything that's these armed and dangerous. But I know that they routinely do that, you know, for their own safety.
But you were talking about when they place the handcuffs.
Place them on the handcuffs and put them on the curb
for their
safety. Right. Okay. That's what I'm talking about. If there was, you know, if they're going to do the true Terry stop, pat him down. You know, if you're worried about your safety, I mean, he could pull out a weapon on the curb just as easily as he could in the back of the seat of a car. So. Well,
thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you both.
Thank you both. We have the case submitted. We'll have it under advisement. We thank you both for being here. We are adjourned.